Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
Hey everyone, welcome to the BTR pod. Mike with you here. I'm recording this little portion on a Saturday night as we're preparing actually for the final tomorrow, Sunday, between Nicolas Mejia and Christopher Eubanks in the final of the Orlando Open. You'll probably hear this a couple days afterwards, so congratulations to both Chris and Nico, whoever actually got through that. Listen, I wanted to give you just kind of a heads up of where we're at for this particular episode. Noah was unable to come down to Orlando. His ankle's still an issue. On top of it, was in the midst of some traveling this week. So if you're a huge Noah Rubin fan, I can't blame you. He is a very attractive man. When he plays tennis, sometimes it's okay. It's like especially for a 5'4" guy. But unfortunately, he's not with us on this particular podcast. It's just me and our guest this week, Ulysses Blanche, who is a guy who I think is immensely talented. Another good run for him here this week, back-to-back, really solid weeks in both Little Rock and Orlando. I know he would like to go just a little bit further, but he seems like he's playing pretty well. So Noah will be joining us again. We'll try to get an update from him for next week's episode, when I will be back in Tulsa, and I'll probably grab somebody from the Tulsa Futures, and Noah will join us for that one. But for now, our interview with the young American, Ulysses Blanche. All right, so we're without Noah Rubin, but let me tell you, Ulysses, how we always start the interview when Noah's here is he will talk to the person, the player, and say, "I remember this time when you kicked my ass." So I'm just going to tell you this story, okay? My daughter is 6.5.
Okay.
She's watched 2 tennis matches in her life, despite her dad being a tennis commentator. One, her favorite player is Jamie Loeb, so she watched Jamie Loeb, I don't know, some match a couple months ago, but the first one she watched was you and Noah Rubin in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and you kicked Noah's ass. I got to tell you, I had to explain to her, and she was 5 at the time, why Noah wasn't getting all the points. I'm not mad about understand. It. She has no idea what's going on in tennis, bless her heart. But she's like, "No, sometimes you don't win, and this guy is beating Noah up."
Yeah, I mean, I didn't beat him up. It was like 5 and 6, if I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's beating him. It's okay.
It's a tough match. It was a good match. I remember that.
But that's title number 2 for you, and it seemingly came out of nowhere, right? And then I know the first 3 months of 2020, it felt like things were going in a good direction for you. And kind of walk us through March and April and May when seemed like you were in such a good headspace, and then all of a sudden, oh my God, what am I doing?
Well,
what are we all doing? I
mean, I think that moment was tough for everyone. No? Yeah. Like, so, I mean, no one really knew what was going on. I mean, taking the tennis aside, it was a pretty tough moment. I mean, for everyone in the personal life. I mean, I ended up going to Asia with my family, and so the beginning, you know, yeah, I was feeling, you know, when it all started, I was feeling good with my tennis and all that, but it wasn't really on my mind at the beginning because it was more of, you know, survival in that moment.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, me and my team had done a lot of stuff during a period of time very well for me to get to that point where I was playing well and I was feeling better with my tennis and my game as the weeks went by and all that. And then, you know, stuff in life happens, I guess. Yeah. And I mean, it happened. I mean, sure.
You sound like Rafa there.
It happened,
and we are in Rome.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, you don't know. I mean, I can, you know, you can say, oh, if it hadn't happened, but it did. And you don't really know what would have happened. So, I mean, just, I don't know, just got to deal with it, I guess.
How did you deal with it in terms of just what was your thing to kind of get your mind off of the tennis side and just allow you to have fun and enjoy life as best you could?
I mean, I was in Taiwan for a while, so I was with my family. I was actually training every day, going to the gym every day for the first, whatever, month or two that I was there.
Yeah.
And then when I came back to the States, I was in my apartment here in Orlando. And, I mean, again, I was training almost every day, working out as much as I could. And I was, you know, spending a lot of time with my girlfriend who was playing a lot of matches in Tampa and Saddlebrook. And
okay, some of the UTR things.
Yeah, just like money stuff that she was playing, and we were spending a lot of time together, and I mean, it was just that, basically. That was my life.
So I want to talk a little bit about your early life, because I think people know that you kind of traveled around when you were young. Can you explain why, with your dad's job, and why you were kind of all over the world?
Yeah, I mean, just because of my dad's job, we traveled a lot. I mean, we moved a lot when I was young.
What does he do?
I mean, he worked in a lot of stuff, like mosquito repellent and then some other
I was expecting
stuff
like army
uncle.
Or like some sort of contract.
Yeah,
okay.
No, like a lot of different stuff. But I mean, the longest thing he had was when he worked in Coke.
Okay. You mean Coca-Cola, not cocaine. I mean, I just want to make sure we're clear on that. The good Coke, not the bad.
The Coke that I'm allowed to talk about right now. And yeah, I mean, that's when we moved to Thailand was when he started working with Coke. And I mean, I was there in Thailand for like 8-9 years until I moved somewhere else. I moved to Argentina because of my tennis.
Yeah.
But then before that, we were in China. Before that, we were in India. And then before that, we were in Seattle. I mean, I don't remember Seattle, but I remember China and India. But I mean, it was normal for me. I don't know.
Yeah. How do you, I think, you know, as I'm a parent of a young child, I keep hearing in my head, you know, especially as a divorced parent, like kids need stability. That's like a thing that just keeps ringing in my head. You have stability, but it's in a different way, right? Like you seem like you always have that home environment, even though it's in different location. Yeah. How do you come to grips with that in terms of like how it's translated now into your life where you're just moving around from place to place?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easier for me to kind of adapt and be away for a while and not really, you know, if I'm not in the States for a while, it's fine. If I'm not in a certain place for a while, it's fine. And if I have to go somewhere or do something because of my tennis for a while, it's fine. Like, you just have to.
It just is. Yeah.
But, I mean, I moved to Thailand when I was like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
So when I moved around China, India, and all that, those places, I was kind of young.
Yeah.
So I didn't really understand, I guess, that much. When I moved to Thailand and I kind of grew up in Thailand, it was normal. I went to an American school there, and I mean, it was normal for me to live in Thailand. I lived in Thailand until I was 13.
Yeah.
And I would come to the States quite a bit because of my tennis, and I would try to start to travel a little bit and all that to Europe sometimes. And yeah, I mean, I was there for a while.
Yeah.
I was there for a good number of years.
So what's home for you now? I mean, I know you've got the place here in Orlando, but what's home?
Home for me, I think, is Argentina.
Okay.
Home is Argentina to me. Because, I mean, I'm based here in Orlando.
Right.
And to me, my tennis home is here. But when I think about my home, you know, where my friends are and where, you know, I think I developed as a person quite a bit and where my roots, as much roots as I have in one place, I feel like it's Argentina.
Okay.
And I haven't been there in a while, too, which which sucks, but yeah, I think it's there.
So you just an Argentinian football fan as well? I mean, is that
heavy,
that's
yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Your basketball team would be then, I mean, do you have, I guess I don't know the NBA as well as I used to. Mm-hmm. As we were talking last night, I'm still an Iverson guy, but who's your team? I mean, who do you
Sixers.
Okay. Why?
Sixers. Just me and my best friend in Argentina.
Yeah.
I mean, we obviously, you know, back then Ginobili and all that stuff, but I mean, we loved the NBA, and I mean, we loved Iverson, and we loved, you know, the history of the Sixers and stuff. And when we were young, we just started following the Sixers, and just, I don't know, it was kind of, you know, a deal we made. You know, it was the Sixers. That's it. It's done. You know what I mean? From a young age, and it's been the Sixers since then.
So tell me about your family. Obviously, I think people know your siblings all play tennis as well. I mean, what's that family life like when you guys do get some time together, which I imagine is extremely rare?
Yeah, we don't see each other much. I mean, we actually see each other a little more now that they're starting to travel and they come to Orlando sometimes. Yeah. They come to USTA. But there were a couple of years where I was in here and in Argentina where they were somewhere else, and I would only see them twice a year or something.
Yeah.
But it's good. Again, you know, it might sound a little weird, but we're used to it. So we're used to not seeing each other, and we stay as connected as we can. And then, yeah, I mean, we're just used to it. Everyone's all over the place all the time.
And I know your younger brother is obviously, is he seated at the French? I know
he's... Yeah, he was seated, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I've heard a little about a bit more about him, to be frank, than you. When you were coming up, I know you got to number two. I think you were in that class just right behind like Francis and Taylor and and Riley and Tommy and all those
same,
guys.
Same year as Francis, but one less than the other one.
So do you feel like you were overlooked at that time frame just because those guys were getting so much attention?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
Because they were so good at that age that, if you know, if I were someone who worked at, I don't know, USTA or anywhere else, I don't know if I would have looked at me either that much. You know, they were so good. I mean, not the 97s even, but the 98s, like Cause, when I was 16, 17, 15, 14, Cause, and you had France, and you had Mo, you had Blumberg, then you had Ponwith, then you had all these guys that were just, they were insane. And so,
importantly, you didn't mention Noah, which is good.
I mean, Noah's a little older. He's old. He's done. Back then, he was done. But yeah, I mean, no. I mean, there were so many good guys. They were so actually unreal.
Yeah.
That I remember the first time I went to USC, I was 15, and Eric invited me.
Mm. Nunez?
And no one knew who I was. I didn't know who anyone was except for a few of them. And when I got there, I mean, I couldn't believe it. Like, they were all insane.
Yeah.
They're all a joke. And, you know, obviously growing up in South America, the guys are good.
Yeah.
Guys are good. And South America, you know, it's tough and all that. But when I got there, it was pretty shocking. Not really.
What do you think made you different in that time?
I actually think different was that I wasn't as good as them.
Really?
So, I don't know. I mean, I didn't really have a sense of belonging anywhere because I was just like, I need to get better. I mean, these guys were so good that it was just, need to get better, follow your own way. I mean, I was living so far away. I was just, you know, I was kind of separate. And so it's just, I don't know, focus on your own thing and try to get better every day.
So it's interesting because you and I have almost never interacted.
Yeah.
We went out to dinner that one time. I guess it was Carrie. Yeah. Carrie last year? Here?
It was Carrie.
We went out for barbecue. Yeah. But I've found myself over these years thinking to myself, I can't tell if maybe he just doesn't like me. That's entirely possible. I get that a lot. Noah doesn't like me. It's totally fine. I don't know if it's that. I don't know if you're shy. Maybe you're guarded. What, you know, you seem like a pretty quiet guy. Is that accurate, or are you just kind of more protective of who you are as a personality?
I don't feel like I'm shy or guarded, actually.
It's because I'm the old white guy.
Yeah.
It's okay.
No, I feel like I'm actually pretty outgoing.
Okay.
I feel like I'm pretty easy. I mean, you know, if I don't know someone, I might not talk to them that much, but I mean, with the guys that I have spoken to or hang around with, I get along with everyone. And I mean, I don't know. I just do my own thing.
All right, we need to work on this with you and I then. But who are your guys? Like, if you're that one class, you know, behind some of them, Francis, same group, who are those guys that you consider the core friends on tour now?
Core friends on tour? I mean, for, I don't know. It's complicated because on tour, it's tough to have friends, in my opinion.
Yes.
I don't think you should, at least for me at this moment, I don't think I should be too invested in having too many friends on tour.
Interesting.
But, you know, I get along with a lot of people. Like I said, I hang around, you know, the Americans a lot,
yeah.
Especially in Orlando and playing the tournaments here, and I get along with them very well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you got a bunch of guys there. Then, obviously, the South Americans I've known since I was young.
Right.
And then I think I'm mostly, I guess, friends with the guys that are around my age because I've known them for so long and I've known them the longest. And, you know, there are a bunch of guys here and there that I've known for so long that it's just, yeah.
It just is.
Yeah.
The friendship thing, I've been starting to have some thoughts about. It kind of started with Jensen Brooksby. As I've started to kind of think about who he is, he's a guy who, like, he's polite. He's very nice. But like, he goes out there, he does not give a fuck about anything.
Yeah.
He's just there to kick your ass.
Yeah.
And somebody asked me if that is just so. So much a deviation from American male tennis, because we tend to be guys who are just kind of like having fun, enjoying the time, and maybe not like, I'm going to fucking kill you on a tennis court. Do you think that's an accurate assessment? I know that's a really big and deep question.
I mean, I think each person is on a different path, in the sense of, you know, someone like Jensen, you know, who, you know, obviously has been doing so well this year. I think he's been going to tournaments, and he's not there, like I said, to make friends or to be social or whatever. I mean, he's just there to, you know, do his thing and try to win,
because
that's what he wants to go above. And that's kind of the view I have as well. You know, it's not like I'm rude or, you know, I try to be a dick to someone. But, I mean, I try to go to tournaments and I want to win. And, you know, I want to get out of here. You know, I don't want to play challengers until, you know, I'm old.
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of guys that maybe want the same thing but have a different way of going about it. But in my opinion, I think that's the way to do it.
So in talking to you now for 14 minutes,
mm-hmm.
I get this sense that you feel like you've said to me on multiple occasions kind of this idea of like, you know, it is what it is. You know, this is just my normal. With that being said, when I watch you play, you feel like you're constantly on the edge, like constantly on the edge, like first couple of points, and like you could just lose your shit, man. So how do you translate this calmness that you seem to have off the court into this fiery brand of tennis?
I mean, I think that's just how I am. I mean, I'm calm off court, but I mean, again, I'm not calm sometimes. I think I'm pretty quick to go, you know, anyway. I don't know, just how I am. And
it's an interesting dichotomy, because those are two pretty different personalities within one person, right?
Yeah, it's just the way I am on court, I feel like I am off the court.
Okay.
You know, some people have a different kind of version of themselves when they step on the court. I feel like I'm pretty real always. And so kind of wear my, you know, emotions on my sleeves and kind of show it a lot. And, you know, in tennis, I think it's could be good, but it could be bad as well.
Yeah,
and for me, it's, you know, in the past, it's hurt me quite a bit, but I've, you know, worked on it quite a bit. And I think I'm doing a lot better. And especially last year and a half, I think I've been doing quite a bit better in managing my emotions and, you know, here and there. And yeah, but at the end of the day, I'm still me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to. It's how I am. It's what's going to make me play better too. Is the, I guess, the fire or the like pumping myself up or the whatever. You know, that's just how.
It's hard to ride that roller coaster, I imagine, though.
Yeah.
Especially, like, I think back. I tend to remember this match in Aptos a couple of years ago, and I think just 1 year you played Aptos, and I think it might have even been the year you won Perugia.
Oh yeah.
And you just seemed like you were just.
Yeah.
Just upset at like from the get-go. And like, I found myself thinking, if he's able just to harness that into a more positive direction on court, like, holy shit. So how do you do that?
I mean, I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
Obviously. But I think that's been, I think my biggest, you know, area that I need to work on is the stuff that I can, you know, that when I fight myself.
Yeah.
Because everyone can hit forehands well, serve well, backhands well. It can be a little better, a little worse. But
yeah.
I think the way you manage yourself is what makes a difference. So I've been trying to control that as much as possible and harness it in the right way. Because I'm not someone who, if, you know, I get too mellow, I do well either. I actually don't. So it's just balancing it out a little bit. So. Yeah.
So when you're at a hotel here, without hanging out with too many people, and I don't. Why are you at a hotel if you're in Orlando?
Because my lease actually ended.
Oh, really?
So I didn't renew my lease. Yeah.
So what the hell are you gonna do?
I don't know. I gotta figure it out. I mean, I was staying with my family for a little bit, and then I was out, and then I was like, I'll deal with it when I have to deal with it. But
I mean, again, this is me, the old guy here, but I'm just like, you should probably deal with it now. I mean, like, have a place. Yeah. Like, do you have an Airbnb or something?
I mean, I was staying at an Airbnb for a while that my dad got because my family was here and we were staying together. But
yeah.
I don't know. Not anymore. I mean, I'm just fighting for everyday hospitality here that the Challenger gives me. And
so that's why you're in the quarters.
That's why I'm in the quarters. That's why I'm pumped up. You know, I actually thought today, you know, I have hotel until Saturday, guaranteed. Let's go.
So what's I mean, what are the next few months like? I mean, Noah and I have been talking about this a lot. Like, there's just this lack of stability right now, especially it's been so hard to get American Challengers up and running the same schedule.
That's crazy.
You're without an apartment, a place to live here, for God's sakes. Like, how are you planning your schedule over the next couple months to a place where you feel like you're comfortable and you won't have to worry about that and can play your best tennis on court?
Well, first off, I think that, stuff with my tennis has to get... I mean, I've been hurt since December.
Okay.
So I got hurt in December, and I think I mismanaged a couple of decisions at the start of the year.
Yeah.
To where I didn't think I gave myself enough time to recover, and I didn't take care of it. I had a hip strain, and then I had an issue again with my hip, and I just kept playing. And so I think it's, you know, trying to be smart in what I need for my body, not, you know, being impatient about things, wanting to play well again. I think it's going to come with making the right decisions. And then leading up to the summer here, I mean, obviously I'm looking forward to the States having tournaments again, like Challengers and ATPs. You got Atlanta already and Cary, Lexington, whatever, and then the Open. So I think I just want to prepare myself as well as I can for that. Because I know, you know, I feel comfortable on hard courts, and I felt good last year at the Open as well. So, I mean, I think it's just try to take care of my body and just, you know, from there start to play well again. Because, you know, I've been struggling a little bit, but I've been hurt for months, and I didn't take care of it until, you know, a month ago, which is not good.
You look like you're hitting the hell out of the ball. Like, seriously, last week in Little Rock, there was one point on the air when I almost said, holy shit. Like, I was that close. I'm just like, holy, like, it's just, the forehand is just like a fucking rocket right now. It looks like it's gotten bigger, and you've always had that ability to go big, but it looks like it's just consistently coming a little bit more comfortable.
I think that's just, that's work, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's physical in my case.
Yeah.
Because I've always been, like you said, able to hit it big.
Yeah.
But if you can do it over and over, it becomes a constant. I think that's one of the things that we worked a lot with Eric and Lang, you know, my team, was to build my fitness up, build my consistency up to where I would feel more comfortable and safer and be able to do it a longer time. So,
yeah.
I mean, if you say that's good, I mean, then we're doing something better.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So.
And Eric Nunez, you've gotten kind of back into your corner of late. Is that right? So talk about that relationship. You mentioned it kind of early in your USTA career, if you will. So what's it like having him 9-10 years later kind of be part of the group for you?
I think it's been great. I mean, I started with Eric around 2 years ago, two and a half years ago almost, around there. And I think it's been really good. He's given me a lot of attention. He's given me a lot of peace, and he's given me a lot of stuff to look forward to on the court, off the court, and stuff that I had to get better all the time. And I think that, like I said, once I started with him and Lang, I think for a good year and a half, we did a lot of stuff well, a lot of things well. And I think that, even though it wasn't showing too much on the court, they were able to kind of guide me towards the right way. And, you know, last year I was playing really well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like I said, I think that making the right decisions and being with people that can help me and being smart about things is the best way I can go. And I think that Eric, you know, has a lot to give me still, and Lang as well. I think they're very important for my tennis.
We can be friends now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because, like, I know you don't want to make friends, but, like, I'm not competing against you, so it's cool. You know, we're good now, okay? Yeah. Talk to me about the Sixers. Can they actually do it? I mean, it's tough. I don't know if I have the belief.
I mean, it has to be tough if you want to win. I mean, it has to be tough. It's never not going to be tough, but.
I don't know. I'm a Bulls fan from back in the day, so, I mean, it kind of came easy for a little bit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You guys are spoiled, huh? You guys are still spoiled. It's a joke.
I mean, we had a six
you guys
ring.
Are
like,
still spoiled. It's crazy.
They haven't done shit in 25 years, but still, we got the six.
You
rings.
Don't need to do shit. You got Jordan. That's it. That's done. You're good. I don't know. I mean, the Sixers is a tough team.
Yes,
it's a tough team. Especially the recent years, it's been tough. It is by far the best year that I've seen them in a while.
Yeah.
I think Embiid needs to stay healthy.
Yes.
I mean, it's like the Argentinian national team. Like, you know, people can talk shit about Messi, can say whatever about Messi, but if Messi's not healthy, Messi's not playing, you're not going to do anything.
Right.
Same thing with Embiid. I mean, we can win a game here and there without him, but if he's not healthy, and, you know, he gets hurt quite a bit, I think, because he's kind of big.
Yes.
But if he stays healthy and... I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. I mean, I think they're going to play Brooklyn. I think we'll get through Atlanta fine. I mean, the first game was tough.
Trae Young is that dude, man.
Yeah, but the first game we played, I think the worst game of the season, and we ended up losing by like 4 points.
Yeah.
And then we won yesterday, you know what I mean? And I think we'll be fine. Brooklyn's going to be tough. Brooklyn's going to be insanely tough.
If Harden's out, though.
Harden's out, but we need Embiid to be healthy.
Yes.
We need Simmons to make at least 4 free throws in the whole game. and we need Tobias Harris to do something. Like, there's so many pieces in the Sixers that sometimes, like, you have, like, 8 things.
Yes.
And sometimes just one's going on. Like,
it's an interesting thought, though, because, like, the NBA right now is so star-driven. Do they have those big enough guys? I mean, and don't get me wrong, like, respect for Embiid, right? But, like... It's not KD. It's not James Harden. LeBron.
To me, he's... To me...
That's tough,
no, man. To me, in this moment, best player in the NBA.
Get the fuck out of here.
Right now, best player in the NBA. If you look at him as a whole, as a center, he can shoot, he can defend, he does everything. He's unstoppable in the paint because he's too big. Best player. MVP of the season, in my opinion. I could be biased, but to me, he played better than Joker.
I respected you for the first 23 minutes of this chat, but now you've gone one step.
I mean, I gotta hold on to faith. I respect that. Brooklyn, it's just Brooklyn keeps me up at night. Brooklyn keeps me up at night.
KD is.
I mean it's KD, but it's even Blake Griffin, who's 57 years old, and
I respect it.
You know, again, you playing know. Like he's 24, like Chris Paul is like.
Right.
Makes no sense, but whatever. You know, it happens.
It's good to get the right kind of drugs, you know.
Yeah,
later
I mean, when you're rich, you get stuff that other people don't get.
I'm actually 81 years old, but you wouldn't know it because of all the drugs.
So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, a lot of pain in the last couple of years. I'll tell you that.
A lot of
that shot with the Raptors still gets me every single.
How many times did it bounce?
Probably like 18. You know, it's like. I still see it on the rim. I still see it bouncing up and down on the rim. It's brutal. But
I tell you what, next trip where I'm with you, I will to prove it. I have my Iverson jersey. I will bring it. It's a little too snug on me now because I keep gaining some weight in quarantine and right after. I haven't gotten back to it, but I'll bring it. We'll I'm not going to say shoot, but we'll hang out.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Cool.
For sure.
I appreciate your time. Thank you for making this entertaining when Noah's not here.
I appreciate it.
And don't call me sir.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand, and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.